तस्मै अस्मै यथा प्राह नारदो देवदर्शनः। King Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, how did Narada Muni, whose hearers are as fortunate as those instructed by Lord Brahma, explain the transcendental qualities of the Lord, who is without material qualities, and before whom did he speak? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Devarshi Narada was directly instructed by Brahmaji, who was also directly instructed by the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the instructions imparted by Narada to his various disciples are as good as those of the Supreme Lord. That is the way of understanding Vedic knowledge. It comes down from the Lord by disciplic succession. And in this transcendental knowledge is distributed to the world by this descending process. There is no chance, however, to receive the Vedic knowledge from mental speculators. Therefore, wherever Narada Muni goes, he represents himself as authorized by the Lord, and his appearance is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the disciplic succession, which strictly follows the transcendental instruction, is the bona fide chain of disciplic succession. And the test for such bona fide spiritual masters is that there should be no difference between the instruction of the Lord originally imparted to his devotee and that which is imparted by the authority in the line of disciplic succession. How Narada Muni distributed the transcendental knowledge of the Lord will be explained in later cantos. It will appear also that the Lord existed prior to the material creation, and therefore his transcendental name, quality, etc., do not represent any material quality. Whenever, therefore, the Lord is described as aguna, or without any quality, it does not mean that he has no quality, but that he has no material quality, such as the modes of goodness, passion, or ignorance, as the conditioned souls have. He is transcendental to all material conceptions, and thus he is described as aguna. Shukadev Goswami, in the previous chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, has explained what Lord Brahma spoke to his son and disciple, Narada Muni, in regard to the various scheduled incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the great virtue of the transcendental disciplic succession is being revealed. We find herein that the Lord personally spoke to Lord Brahma by imparting Vedic knowledge unto him. He became perfectly self-realized and thus performed his prescribed duty of creating the various manifestations within this universe, as well as populating the universe with various species of life. But the most important part of Brahma's function is not to create the universe, but rather to distribute transcendental knowledge in such a way that people who are imprisoned within this universe can understand quite thoroughly why they are imprisoned, who they are, what the purpose of their existence is, and how to come into the pure, free land of transcendental service to the Lord in the spiritual world. The purpose of this material creation is to teach the spirit soul a very thorough lesson. And what is that lesson? That we are not meant to be apart from the eternal object of our love, Krishna. We are not meant to go against the very nature of our existence. What is the nature of our existence? Ahoitaki apratihata. To serve the Lord without motivation and without condition. Anyone who wants to enjoy apart from the Lord, anyone who wants to take a position of being the enjoyer on any level, is completely defying his own nature. And this is the root cause of all suffering, all implication and complication, which is plaguing the minds of everyone within material creation. So Lord Brahma, his real transcendental purpose is to not only create the facilities that the living entity wants for separate independent desires from the Lord's, but to teach the living entity how to go back home, back to Godhead. His first disciple is Narada Muni. And Narada Muni heard submissively from Lord Brahma exactly what the Lord spoke to Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma is sitting on that lotus flower coming from the navel of Lord Narayan, he was enlightened with all transcendental wisdom. And through his tapasya, through his willingness to serve the Lord, he realized that wisdom. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevam upadekshantite jnanam jnani nastuta darshanam. Krishna explains, if we want to know the truth, we must approach a spiritual master, and we inquire submissively, and we render service. In this way, the self-realized soul can impart the truth to us, and we can realize those truths. So really, Lord Brahma and the situation of Arjuna at Bhagavad Gita before the battle of Kurukshetra is very similar. Arjuna at one time thought he knew who he was, who was Krishna, what was supposed to be done, and what should not be done. He had his own idea of dharma, but he came to the point of complete bewilderment and confusion just by the nature of this world. The circumstances that come upon us naturally create this confused state. So Arjuna, he was so bewildered. He didn't know who he was. He didn't even know where he was. Although he was sitting there, he was so confused. He didn't know what he should do, what he should not do. He was in a completely bewildered condition of life. And that bewilderment humbled him to the point where he approached Krishna with complete submissiveness, ready to do anything the Lord wanted him to do. Similarly, Lord Brahma, there was darkness all around him. He didn't know who he was. He didn't know where he was. He did not know what he was supposed to do. He didn't know what he shouldn't do. He was in a completely bewildered state. And in a mood of complete submissiveness, complete humility, he prayed. He prayed to the Lord to give him guidance, to give him knowledge. And he was also ready to do whatever the Lord asked. The Lord spoke two words, tapasya. Two syllables, tapa. And Brahma was willing to do that tapa. For 100 celestial years he was willing to do it. And therefore the Lord imparted to him the transcendental knowledge which would not only liberate Brahma, but could liberate all living beings for all time to come during the whole life of Brahma, who simply receives this knowledge in that same spirit. So this is so important. Disciplic succession is the means by which transcendental knowledge is preserved. But we must understand how to receive that knowledge and who is qualified to speak this knowledge. The qualification of the speaker and the qualification of the one who hears is very similar. We must be willing to hear in utter submissiveness, like Lord Brahma, like Arjuna. We must cast aside all of our previous conceptions and misconceptions of what is reality. That is called submissiveness. Submissiveness is not simply an external show of physical gestures or words. We can fold our hands, we can bow down 1,000 times, we can put straws between our teeth, we can wrap cloth around our necks, and we can cry and say, I do not know anything, I do not know anything, please tell me. And then when you're told, you say, well, I don't think I should do that. That is not submissiveness. Submissiveness means to genuinely understand that all knowledge that you have is various forms of ignorance if it is not coming from the Lord through disciplic succession. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, he taught us at one time, when you go to these very, very big learned scholars, they will not listen to you unless you praise them. Because people who have opulence has become proud. If you have great wealth or beauty or high education or high birth, then you become proud naturally. Because the Svavidvarahustrakaraya, all the dogs, hogs, camels and asses, they appreciate and like to offer praise to bigger dogs, hogs, camels and asses. So if someone is very learned, someone very wise in whatever his field, Prabhupada said, my dear sir, you praise him, you are very great, you are very learned, and the person then becomes very receptive to hear what you're saying. He opens his mind, he opens his heart, and then you say, but please, hear from me. He's ready to hear, he's already been hearing, and he likes what he hears. And the next step is that everything you know is all nonsense. Yes, you have great knowledge. You're a great learned soul, but all your learning and knowledge is all nonsense. That is how you must preach to people. Because unless it brings us closer to God, it is all nonsense. It is all various reflections of illusion, of ignorance. Therefore, we must be submissive. We must realize whether I am a BA, an MA, a PhD, or whatever, it is all nonsense. That it will not help me to understand the truth. None of this information will help solve the problems of suffering, of birth and death, of ignorance. Therefore, we must approach like Arjuna. I do not know anything. Please tell me. And I'm willing to do anything you ask me to do. That willingness is a part of submissiveness. Submissiveness doesn't just mean I'm willing to listen to you and believe whatever you say. That's only part. But I'm willing to do whatever you ask me to do. That is submissive. And only if we have that attitude can the transcendental knowledge that comes through our ears, through oral reception, actually take root in our heart and transform our lives. That is the difference between a jnani and a bhakta. Vasudevi bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojata janayatya shivairagyam jnanam jayadahoitakam. Bhakti includes jnana. Bhakti includes vairagya, renunciation. But at the same time, Rupa Goswami says that bhakti must be completely untinged by jnana and karma in order for it to be pure. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmani nakritam anukulyena krishnanu silanam bhaktarutama. So what does this mean? It means speculative knowledge. A bhakta is full of all jnana, but he's ready to surrender to that jnana. That is the difference between a jnani and a bhakta. A jnani hears because it fascinates his mind. A jnani hears because he wants some higher position, either materially or spiritually. A devotee hears knowledge, but he has the complete willingness to surrender to that knowledge. He has complete willingness to serve the Lord with that information that he receives. That is a bhakta. And we find Lord Brahma, he was willing to do anything for the Lord. When he heard these two syllables, tapa, he did 100 years of tapasya without consideration. And then when the Lord imparted to him all the Vedic knowledge, and he told Brahma, now you'd be my instrument. You act on my behalf to create the manifestations within this universe. He immediately took that as his life and soul. And it wasn't easy. As he was giving birth to different creatures, from his rear side, demons came out. Don't think that there will not be obstacles in the path of your service. Don't think there will not be reversals or obstructions. From the time of Brahma, there will be reversals in your execution of your service to your guru. But you have to continue. Sometimes we think, I'm only surrendering, so why isn't everything going perfectly all right? He's asked me to do this service and I'm doing it. Why everything's going wrong? What is this? Why is Krishna doing this to me? Anyways, you can imagine Lord Brahma. He's just submissively, with all humility, just doing the will of the Lord, as an instrument of the Lord, with no ego. And as he's creating, all of a sudden these rakshasas come out of his body. And then they look at him and they want to have sex with him. And he's a man and they're men. And they attack him to have sex. And Brahma's thinking, what is this? I'm just trying to do my seva. He ran away. And he had to give up his body and take another body just to escape from that whole situation. In this way, but then he continued the creation. He continued because it was the Lord's will. Despite whatever complications, despite whatever difficulties may come, he was willing to do his service because that was the will of the Lord. And it was that willingness in Brahma and that submissiveness that made him qualified to be a spiritual master. Because he was truly the servant of the Lord, and he was truly humble, and he heard submissively, Tadvidi pranipatina pariprasnena sevaya. He became the first spiritual master in the disciplic successions of this material universe. And therefore, he imparted the same knowledge, the same words that he heard from Lord Vishnu to his devotee Narada, who was also completely submissive and ready to serve. That is the qualification throughout our disciplic succession. We read, how did Narada become qualified to be Narada Muni? And here, directly from Lord Brahma. In his previous birth, he was a maidservant's son. And there were great devotees who came to the forest, and they were speaking Bhagavad Dharma. And he was listening. He was hearing from them. He was very humble. He had nothing to be proud of. He was very poor. He was from a low birth, maidservant's son. But he listened to what they spoke with such submissive humility and devotion, and he was anxious to serve. He was simply taking care of these great souls. That is the way a disciple hears from Guru. In a mood of serving, being willing to do anything and everything. Then Krishna lets you hear. There's a difference between listening with your ears and hearing with your heart. And the difference is that willingness to serve, that willingness to execute through your life the instruction you receive. So Narada was serving the great souls. And service means not just a ritual formality. Service means to please who you are serving. This must be carefully understood. Just like Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if he asked for water and you bring him milk, that is not service. You may think it's service. You may think that, oh, milk is better than water, so I will be much better if I give him what I like. But that is not service at all. Unless you are on such a highly realized, purified, liberated platform that you actually know the inner heart of the person you're serving. Like Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, stay in Bengal, do not come to Puri next year. So the next year, Lord Nityananda Prabhu came to Puri. And everyone was looking. He's come. But everybody knew what is Lord Nityananda. Everyone understood this is his glory. And Srila Prabhupada explains, Lord Nityananda was a perfectly pure, liberated soul who knew intimately the heart of his master, Lord Chaitanya, who actually wanted him to come to Puri. But unless you are on that platform, you must simply do what you're told, not speculate. Because the whole object of our service is to please the object of our service. The purpose of life is to please Krishna. Samsudhir haritoshanam. All of our occupational duties are only perfected when it gives satisfaction to Krishna. And how do we please Krishna? Madbhakta puja vyalika. We please Krishna by pleasing His devotees. But if we don't please the devotees, we do not please Krishna. If we do not please Guru, yasya prasada bhagavat prasado, you will not get the mercy of Krishna. And what pleases Krishna and the great souls? When what we offer is without a desire for prestige or distinction. To the degree our service is without ulterior motive for our own selfish acquisition, to that degree it is actually pleasing. The great souls are merciful. Srila Prabhupada, even if someone had all bad qualities, any little thing they did, he was pleased. But his being pleased was his mercy, because he knew if I'm not pleased, Krishna's not pleased, and if Krishna's not pleased, there's no hope for this person to make any spiritual advancement. So he was pleased with anything that was done with the slightest bit of sincerity. But to the degree our service is without motivation, without interruption, for the pleasure of the beloved, to that extent we please the Vaishnava and Krishna. So this little maidservant's son, he was so much pleasing by his humble service. He was listening to what they were saying, and he was washing for them, he was helping cooking for them, he was doing everything. Not to be seen as great, but just to be seen as the servant. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, don't try to see Krishna, but serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you. And through this process, the sages blessed him with such heartfelt devotion and prayers to the Lord that his whole life became completely surcharged with a desire for spirituality. And whatever he heard from the sages, he executed. He obviously heard from them, keep your mind always on God, detach yourself from all enjoyment. So upon that instruction, he left for the forest. His mother was bit by a snake and left her this world. And he went through cities. He went through towns. He went through villages. He went through pasture grounds and forests. And nothing had any appeal to him, because he had heard that this whole world and all the enjoyments is an illusion. Keep your mind fixed on Krishna. So he executed that. All the temptations of the world did not disturb his search. Pariprasnena sevaya. He heard submissively with a desire to serve. Therefore, with that qualification, the same as that as Lord Brahma himself, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridayasya junatishtati. Krishna directs us according to our sincerity, from within our heart. By the mercy of Krishna one gets Guru, and by the mercy of Guru one gets Krishna. So due to this most exalted qualification, he was Narada Muni sitting before Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma speaks. And we have heard some of what he told Narada. And Maharaj Parikshit, he is here in inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami. Now you have told me what Krishna spoke to Brahma, what Brahma spoke to Narada. Now please tell me who Narada spoke to and what he spoke. That's what I want to know, because I want to hear more and more about this great disciplic succession. And this anxiousness to hear the glories of such great personalities is the very important beginning of our spiritual lives. And we find throughout our disciplic succession this principle of how humility, submissiveness, and an eagerness, willingness to serve at all costs is there. Today is the appearance day of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. He is one of the most munificent model examples of this principle of a true acharya in disciplic succession. Srila Narottam Das Thakur, born in Khechari Gram, was a prince. The whole town was actually the property of his father. And it was all meant to be inherited by him. He was the only son. He had no competition. But yet he was so anxious to hear the glories of the Lord and serve the Lord. There was an old Brahmin named Krishnadas. And every day he would just speak the glories of Lord Chaitanya and the glories of Lord Chaitanya's associates. And Narottam Das, he was so much happy to hear these beautiful talks. He wanted nothing else in his life. And when he heard about the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami, the renunciation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he took sannyas, when he heard the beautiful qualities of these great souls, he just wanted to serve them. He wanted to give his life and soul only for their pleasure. And by the arrangement of the Lord, he was able to escape from his home because they were very much afraid that he was becoming too much detached. He was constantly chanting the holy names. He was constantly dancing in ecstasy. He was constantly crying in separation. He always wanted to serve the Vaishnavas. So he left home and he went to Vrindavan. And he understood that I must have a spiritual master in disciplic succession to take initiation from. Otherwise, I will not please the Lord properly, because it is the Lord's instruction that we do this. At that time, Jiva Goswami and many of the great acharyas were there in Vrindavan, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Bhugarbha Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis had recently before disappeared and returned to the spiritual world. Narottam Das Thakur was inspired by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within his heart to accept Lokanath Goswami as his guru. Now, how is it? This is the clear understanding that by the mercy of Krishna one gets guru. Because there were so many gurus in Vrindavan. Srinivasacharya had come before Narottam. But Krishna in his heart connected him with faith and devotion to Gopal Bhatta Goswami, although he had ultimate faith and respect for all the other associates of Lord Chaitanya. Still, that connection to serve was there. And by the arrangement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we are somehow or other connected with that desire to hear and serve from a particular representative that he has. It is not really our choice. It is actually the arrangement of the Lord. We have choice. We have freedom. But where and how our faith and desire to serve awakens is by the direction of Krishna within our hearts. So Narottam approached Srila Lokanath Goswami. And Lokanath Das Goswami, he had never accepted a single disciple. By this time he was very aged. He was a personal associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he told Lokanath Goswami in Navadvipa that you should not stay here. because soon I am going to take sannyas, and your love for me is so intimate by nature that you will not be able to survive seeing me cutting my hair and taking the life of renunciation. So you should not be here. You should go to Vrindavan, and I will wait for you there. Lokanath Goswami was directly a disciplic associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. On the Lord's order, he left everything and went to Vrindavan. And there he was waiting for the Lord. And when he heard that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India, he understood, my life is to serve Lord Chaitanya. He left Vrindavan. This is a very important message. To serve his guru, he was willing to leave Vrindavan in a second. Srila Prabhupada, to serve his guru, also left Vrindavan. Because service to the Lord is the means by which we can realize what is Vrindavan. So Lokanath, although he was so happy in the beautiful forests and the groves of Braja, he left to find Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to serve him in every possible way. And he went traveling way, way, way down to the south of India. But he found out that Lord Chaitanya had gone back to Puri. So then he started walking all the way to Puri. Thousands of kilometers he was walking. This was his desire to serve. And when he came near Puri, he found out Lord Chaitanya had gone to Vrindavan to meet Lokanath Goswami. So then he walked all the way to Vrindavan. And he returned to Vrindavan and he found out Lord Chaitanya just left. He went to Prayag. And he decided, it was the evening, tomorrow morning I will go to Prayag, I will leave Vrindavan. But that night Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to him in dream and told him, I want you to stay in Vrindavan. Don't come to see me. You will see me in your service here in Vrindavan. So although his heart, his life, his everything was simply wanted to be with Lord Chaitanya and serve him and hear the ambrosial nectar of his kirtans and his instructions, Lord Chaitanya said, no, do not come to Puri where all the other of my associates are dancing and chanting with me throughout the day and night. Stay in Vrindavan because that is where I want you to serve me. His service attitude was so pure, it was so deep, that he was willing to forsake the personal association of his guru, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, to execute his order by remaining in Vrindavan. And there was no other associates of Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan. He was living practically, Bhugarbha Goswami was there. He was living alone at Kishori Kund. Later Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami came. And he became such a humble servant of them. So we find here in Lokanath Goswami the same principle. Submissiveness, humility, the desire to serve under any condition to please the Master. So Narottam Das, when he asked Lokanath Goswami for diksha, Lokanath Goswami explained, how is this possible? I have not given anyone diksha. I have made a resolution in my heart, I will never give anyone diksha. Because it is a very, very serious responsibility. Giving diksha means you're taking before God, you're taking responsibility for this person's spiritual life. You're taking, God is entrusting that spirit's soul to you when that exchange of vows takes place. It is a very deep and very significant and very serious arrangement. We do not know how serious it is.
But we should strive to understand.
And Lokanath Goswami, since Sanatan and Rupa Goswami had left this world, and since Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu left the world, and Nityananda Prabhu left the world, and Swarup Damodar Prabhu left the world, he was just cast in an ocean of separation. He was weeping day and night in the ecstasy of separation from his masters. So how could I initiate? How can I be guru for anyone? I am too fallen. I am too unworthy. But Narottam Das Thakur explained to him that I have already fixed my heart and mind at your lotus feet. And whatever the Lord wills will certainly be done. So Narottam Das Thakur did not want to disturb his guru. Narottam Das Thakur wanted to please his guru. Initiation or no initiation, he wanted to please his guru. So he would hear from him. Whenever Lokanath Goswami would speak, Srila Narottam Thakur would listen. Listen with a desire to surrender. And such a surrendered soul, he served with such freedom from any sense of ulterior motives. Nobody except Krishna in his heart even knew the service he was performing. In the early mornings, Lokanath Das Goswami would perform his morning duties, which means he would evacuate, he would clean himself, and he would go to take his bath in Jamuna. Narottam, in the night, when nobody was around, he would go to that place, and with his hands, he would very carefully clean the stool and the urine, and he would wash the whole area with this. He would sweep the area, he would wash the area, he would put some whatever was required. And every day Lokanath Goswami would come and he would see, how is this? Every day I'm passing and when I come back there's nothing here. It's all so fresh, it's all so clean, it's all so nice. Now it wasn't that Narottam was going back and telling the other bhaktas, do you know what service I'm doing? Secret service. Nobody knew. Nobody but the Lord in his heart knew. He did not do it to get points. He did not do it so that he would be number one on the charts. And he would get certificates of appreciation or awards. He didn't even tell Lokanath Das Goswami he was doing it. He wasn't doing it for himself. He was simply doing it because he wanted Lokanath Goswami to be happy. That's all. Even if he doesn't know I did it. It's not that he was thinking, I will do this and then he will find out and give me initiation. Because he'll know I'm such a good devotee. He didn't mind if he never found out. He only did it because he wanted his guru to be happy, to be pleased. That's all. But Lokanath Das Goswami, he was wondering, what is this? Why? Why is somebody cleaning like this every day? Or every night? Secretly? Who could it be? So one night, he was hiding in the trees. And there Narottam came.
and with tears of love in his eyes, with such humility and such meticulous care, he began to clean the ground and lift up all the refuse. And Narottam, as Lokanath Das Goswami was watching him, he couldn't believe what he was seeing. He came out with tears in his eyes, his heart filled with love. Narottam, what are you doing? You are coming from a family of aristocracy. You are a prince meant to be coronated as a king. You are the most learned of all scholars. You have left a palace to come here to clean the urine and stool of somebody? Why? And Narottam, with utter honesty, replied that I have left the insignificant wealth and treasures of this mortal world, but I have attained the supreme treasure. I have attained the supreme wealth of this service. Serving a great soul like you in such a menial and humble way is the ultimate wealth. It is a wealth that even Indra, the king of heaven, cannot fathom. The opportunity to serve is the greatest fortune, the greatest treasure. To serve the Vaishnavas, to serve Guru Maharaj. Lokanath Goswami's heart melted when he saw Narottam's genuine humility and devotion and eagerness to serve. And soon after that, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's inspiration, Lokanath Goswami gave Narottam Das Thakur Diksha, initiation. And perfectly instructed him in the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, as they had heard from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Narottam Das remained in Vrindavan for some years. He studied under Srila Jiva Goswami by the order of Lokanath Das Goswami. But he was always anxious to serve his Guru Maharaj. Always fixed, his life was surrendered to that and that alone. And when Jiva Goswami and Lokanath Das Goswami ordered Narottam, Shamananda and Srinivas to go to Bengal with the books, can you imagine how difficult it was for them to leave the holy land of Braj Bhumi, to leave the Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami? They had such deep love for each other. To leave an environment like that. But it was the order. And this was their qualification. They were willing to sacrifice their own happiness to make their master happy. They were willing to sacrifice their life to make their master happy. And therefore they left. And in the village of Khetri, Lokanath Goswami was sending messages to Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur was sending messages back to Lokanath Goswami, how he was trying to serve him. Lokanath Das Goswami said, I think you should install deities. This is my instruction to you. And you should teach people the science of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and teach them all the process of Harinam Kirtan. So following the orders of his Guru Maharaj, Narottam Das remained in Kachari. He was wondering where to find deities. There was a place where there was a granary, a shed where grains were kept, rice and so on. So that place was filled with poisonous snakes. Nobody would go near it. The person who owned it couldn't even get any grains out of it, because there were just, it was just filled with snakes, just sizzling here and there and everywhere else. So Narottam had a dream where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed that he was in that granary. So Narottam came. Previously, this man had sent for so many tantrics and for so many snake charmers and so many others, just magicians, different types of sadhus, to try to get the snakes out. But the more they would chant their mantras or play their shanais or whatever they were doing, the more venomous and angry the snakes would just go psss. So everyone basically gave up. The rice is, there was a lot of rice in there too. So Narottam came and said, I want to go in. He said, don't go in, no one can go in. Thousands of snakes. So Narottam just walked right in. Just walked right into the granary. And as soon as he opened the door, all the thousands and thousands of terrible, big, black, venomous snakes, they all slithered away. And for some time he was inside, and he came out with a beautiful deity of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he brought that deity, and later on, six other deities were revealed to Narottam Das Thakur. And during the Gaur Purnima festival, with Janava Devi, Srinivasa Acharya, Shamananda, Vrindavan Das Thakur, Achyutananda, the son of Advaita, all the great Vaishnavas, Raghunandan Thakur, they came to install the deities. Big, beautiful, wonderful kirtans. So we find in the life of Narottam Das Thakur the same essential quality as we find in Brahma and in Narada. What to speak of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he appeared, he would not preach until he was given an instruction by his spiritual master to preach. He did not even reveal his purpose as a Yuga Dharma until he received the blessings of his spiritual master. In Gaya, when he met with Srila Ishwara Puri, he approached him, I do not know anything, please instruct me. And he was cooking with his own hands and then serving. God is serving, because he wanted to show what is a disciple without any prestige. And then he asked, please give me the mantra. I am your servant. And the Lord, with such humble, menial devotion, served his guru and heard from him. And even was very happy when his guru would defeat him. He would accept defeat. He wouldn't try to prove his scholarship. He was Nimai Pandit. He was the greatest scholar. He already totally annihilated in debate Keshava Kashmiri. But when he came before his guru, he didn't try to present himself as the greatest scholar. He presented himself as an ignorant fool. Once his guru said, please make a correction in my writings. Lord Chaitanya said, here is the correction. First he said, actually, how can I correct you? You are my guru, Maharaj. You are a great Vaishnava. Whatever you do is perfect because it's pleasing to Krishna. Materially it may seem right or wrong, but we're not concerned with material. Even if it's wrong by material sense perception, if it's pleasing to Krishna, it's right. And if it's done in devotion, it's pleasing to Krishna. So who are we to correct? But still, he said, no, this is the service I'm giving you to correct, so that other people will understand. So he found a correction. And Ishwara Puri said, you are wrong. I thought about it. You are wrong. Lord Chaitanya said, yes, I am defeated. Thank you. And in Gaya, he approached Ishwara Puri, and Ishwara Puri told him that you are a fool. You are a fool. You should not study Vedanta. Can you imagine talking to Nimai Pandit, who was triumphant over Keshav Kashmiri, who every other pundit in Navadvipa would tremble in fear to have to even see him because he would start debating with them? He said, don't bother. You are a fool. You cannot understand Vedanta. Just chant the holy names of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was explaining this. He was explaining it to Prakashananda Saraswati. He said, my guru saw me as a great fool because I was a great fool. You think you understand Vedanta? I cannot understand Vedanta. And then he explained Vedanta and completely defeated the greatest scholars of Varanasi, thinking himself a fool, simply doing it as a service to his spiritual master. And then his guru told him, you go out and you spread the glories of the holy name and pure bhakti throughout the world. Then he went out and began his preaching mission. This is disciple. This is guru. This is parampara. So Narottam Das Thakur and all of our great acharyas, they had this quality, which is most rare and which is most exalted. We do not exalt a person because of the great feats that they can perform within this world. In our hearts, we exalt that person who is humbly and submissively hearing from Krishna through parampara, and with all humility and devotion, being an instrument in the hands of the parampara to be the servant of the servant of the servant. That is the only exalted characteristic that we can honor and take seriously. Everything else are simply manifestations of the interactions of the three modes of material nature. And of course we know that Narottam Das Thakur, as a humble servant, as an instrument in the hands of his Guru Maharaj, Lokanath Goswami was preaching, and such a great scholar as Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. We have discussed him a few days ago. He was coming from the topmost Brahmin family. He was such a scholar of all the scriptures, and such an orator. He could speak in such a convincing way. He was the topmost Brahmin and the most highly prestigious scholar of the whole area. And he saw the two children, Hariram and Ram Krishna. He saw how they became so pure by the association of Narottam. He wanted to be like them. He didn't want to be a big scholar. He wanted to be pure and simple like them. They found where the nectar really was. So he began to condemn himself that all my scholarship, all my prestige, all my high birth, all my physical beauty, all the wealth that I may get, it's all useless if I do not become the menial, humble servant of Narottam Das Thakur. And thus, he surrendered to Narottam Das Thakur and became his humble servant, completely putting aside all his preconceptions, just willing to hear and to serve, eager to serve. And this became a great controversy, because he was the most famous Brahmin, and Narottam was not even a Brahmin. He was from a lower caste. And yet Ganga Narayan Chakravarti was taking instructions and initiation from Thakur Narottam. But Ganga Narayan did not care about his prestige. He did not care what the people of his caste thought of him. He only concerned himself with one thing. And this is the test. This is the test of how much we want Krishna consciousness. If we are going to be swayed and influenced by family members or caste members or society members, then we are simply not worthy. We are not fit to receive the treasure of bhakti. Ganga Narayan Chakravarti was ostracized and condemned by most of the Brahmin community. But he didn't care about being a Brahmin. He wanted to be a servant. He wanted to be a pure servant of the Lord and his pure devotees in disciplic succession. Therefore, he cast all that away and surrendered to Thakur Narottam Das. And his disciple, Sri Krishna Charan, his disciple, Sri Radharaman Chakravarti, and his disciple was Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, whose disciple was Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. Later on down the line, Jagannath Das Babaji, Thakur Bhakti Vinod, Sri Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and then our own beloved Guru Maharaj, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who demonstrated the same consistent quality of a perfect disciple and a perfect teacher. At Ultadanga Junction Road in Calcutta, at the first little, it was called Bhakti Vinod Bhavan. And it was the first Gaudiya Math. Srila Prabhupada met him on that rooftop, his Guru Maharaj, and immediately accepted defeat and asked, "How can I serve you?" Unconditionally. And like Narottam Das Thakur, he was living in Vrindavan. But the order of his Guru Maharaj was not to stay in Vrindavan. The order of his Guru Maharaj was to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya throughout the world in the English language. Srila Prabhupada heard his Guru's words so deeply. He was so submissive, he was so humble. And he was eager to serve, willing to serve. Whatever obstacles came on his path meant nothing. But the pleasure of his guru meant everything. And he left. He came here to Bombay. He begged. Here is the greatest, greatest Paramhamsa, coming from the greatest place in the universe, Vrindavan Dham. The exalted, most exalted disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, relishing the innermost pastimes of Radha and Krishna in his heart. Maharaj. Maharaj means, when we talk about a renunciate as Maharaj, it means even the kings should bow down at their feet, because they have conquered the kingdom of Maya by their devotion. And he came to Bombay penniless, and he sat like a beggar
to a Mataji, Sumati Muraji, a sannyasi paramhamsa, the greatest person in the universe, is sitting on the steps, not even given a chair, just sitting on the steps, on the ground, begging a woman for a ticket to America so that he could serve his Guru Maharaj for days. That was the extent of his willingness to please his Guru Maharaj by serving him. And we all know to some little extent what Srila Prabhupada went through, what he did to somehow or other begin this wonderful movement, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. For a year he struggled alone, risked his life, his health, his everything. But he did it all as a humble service to his Guru Maharaj. At Radha Kund, his spiritual master spoke, "If you get money, print books." How he heard that instruction from that, just by his submissiveness to hear that one little instruction that only lasted hardly a second or two. He flooded the world with tens and millions of Vaishnava literatures. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, whatever Srila Prabhupada heard from him, he executed with his life. And therefore, because he heard with such desire to serve, in the line of Brahma, Narada, and all the previous acharyas, he became qualified to be spiritual master. So this beautiful verse that we are reading today is so illuminating, so instructing. Because Maharaj Parikshit is here humbly inquiring from his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami. And he is anxious to hear of the previous acharyas. He's anxious to hear how this disciplic succession is coming down. And what are the qualities of those great souls in the disciplic succession? What are the qualities of those who are speaking and those, what are the qualities of those who are hearing? And who are hearing, who are they speaking to? And those who heard, who are they speaking to? Please tell me. He's anxious to know more and more and more. And it is in this anxiousness that Shukadeva Goswami, upon hearing Maharaj Parikshit's great eagerness to hear about the great wisdom and personalities of Parampara, he was so inspired to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. Is there any questions? Yes.
Somehow, I'm not able to understand, is this tendency of recognition to show yourself in front of your spiritual master that you are something special. Somehow that prestige to show yourself that something, you are something exceptional, some distinction, that although you are there in the spiritual life from many years or so, but still that thing is not, it doesn't go out from the core of a heart. So what is to be done specifically to see that recognition thing don't go away from our heart, to show yourself that you are something special in front of your spiritual master?
But you are something special. We should desire to be cleansed of all sense of false prestige. Amani namanidena. We should aspire and pray to God, to Guru,
that we can give all respect to others and expect none in return. That we do our service not for recognition, but for the purification of our heart. Why we want our heart pure? As we have said, the more our heart is pure, the more our service is pleasing to our Guru and Krishna. A very sincere devotee doesn't even strive to purify his or her heart for selfish purposes. Even that is for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. So we must pray for this. We must desire this. That is really very much a test of our sincerity. Are you doing your service for recognition, or are you doing your service for the pleasure of Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas? The desire for recognition is in our heart. But are we praying to Krishna to take that away and make our service pure? That is what we should do. And in the association of devotees, by hearing this message, by hearing these topics, by chanting the holy names, and by serving with that prayer, with that motivation, gradually that ahankar, that ego, is removed by the mercy of the Lord. But it may take time, but not much time, considering for millions and millions and millions of births you have been building up this ego. We have been worshipping the ego. We have put our false ego on the altar. We have kicked, consciously, we have kicked Krishna off the altar of our heart and put our own ego. And we've been worshipping it and chanting its glories and hearing its glories and making so many offerings to it. For millions of births, we have created a monster. But Krishna can kill that demon, and he will, through his name, through the blessings of Guru, through Seva. But we have to want it. And if we have this sincerity, gradually, it will happen. It may take your whole life, but that's not much time. 50, 60 years? For billions of years, you've been building it, nourishing it, developing it. If in one life you could remove it, that is not much time at all. But in the process, you have to be willing to fight. You have to be willing to fight against these lower tendencies. First thing, do not find fault in others. Because that displeases Guru and Krishna. And then we're hopeless. If we displease Guru and Krishna, we're simply in a hopeless situation. What purification can be there? Our purification is when Krishna is pleased. He purifies. The ritual itself does not purify us. Krishna purifies us. Is there any other question? Yes?
Maharaj, while quoting the verse Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Chintamani, you were briefly explaining about how Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga already included in Bhakti Yoga. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, we see that many places Prabhupada is explaining about Karma Yoga, and he's saying that it's same as Buddhi Yoga, as work in Krishna consciousness. So I'd just like to know, is there any difference, you know, when we say Karma Yoga, as it is explained in the third chapter, and Buddhi Yoga.
Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, is the path of cultivation of knowledge and fruitive activities. And that must be kicked out. But Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, in the reference of yoga, Prabhupada is talking about connecting to Krishna directly through our actions, through our understandings. And that is actually none different than bhakti. The buddhi yoga, the karma yoga that Prabhupada talks about is bhakti yoga. But that is different than karma kanda and jnana kanda. That is a different path altogether. Karma means action. Karma kanda means fruit of action. Karma yoga means action in the service of the Lord, to connect us to the Lord. That is bhakti. Is there any other questions?
Is there any difference between the 9 processes of hearing, chanting, praying, surrendering to the Lord, all these 9 processes of devotional service, and offering the fruits of your result to Krishna? Is there any qualitative difference between directly hearing Srimad Bhagavat or working for Krishna and offering the fruits of your result to Krishna?
The process of hearing and chanting is the basis of the path of devotional service. And offering the fruits of our actions to Krishna purifies our heart and is pleasing to the Lord according to what particular consciousness we offer our fruits of our actions to Krishna. If we are hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, if we are following the 9 processes of devotional service under the transcendental guidance of such a pure representative of the disciplic succession, then we learn how to offer the fruits of our activities in the service of Krishna in pure love, without following the 9 processes, beginning with hearing and chanting under the direction of a proper spiritual master. We will be offering the fruits of our activities with all sorts of other fruitive desires, or maybe the desire for liberation. So that is not the same. Therefore, the true path of bhakti, the basis, is hearing and chanting under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. Does that answer your question? So many people are offering the fruits of their activities to Krishna. A devotee is also supposed to offer all the fruits of their activities to Krishna. But what consciousness are you offering the fruits? Are you doing it with a desire that Krishna will elevate you to the heavenly planets? Are you doing it with the desire that Krishna will give me a husband or a wife or money or prestige or freedom from a disease? Or are you offering the fruits of your actions with a desire to get liberated and once and for all stop suffering the miseries of this world? Or are you offering the fruits of your activities with a genuine, pure, unmotivated prayer to please Krishna and to please his devotees? That pure consciousness can only come about through tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya, through inquiring submissively from a spiritual master, inquisitive submissiveness, and a desire to serve. And a proper spiritual master, what does he teach you?
Sravana Kirtana Smarana Bandana Pada Sevana Daskire Pujana Sakijana Atmani Vedana. He teaches you the 9 processes of devotional service. If he doesn't, he is not a bona fide spiritual master. One more question, is there? Here.
What if we don't have any inquisitiveness? What if we don't have any inquisitiveness? You mentioned that we should approach in a submissive way and also be inquisitive. But if we accept everything is correct and everything makes sense, but we have no inquisitiveness. If we don't have any inquisitiveness, but we accept everything as correct,
then your life is perfect.
Then what is the meaning of inquisitiveness? Why is it specifically said that we should approach in that mood?
Inquisitiveness means an eagerness to advance through the process of hearing. When Maharaj Parikshit was inquiring from Shukadev Goswami, there were also many other great rishis there, and they were all inquisitive. The proof that they were inquisitive was they were sitting there listening. They were eager to hear. Whether you're asking the question or whether someone else is asking the question, if you are eager to hear, that means inquisitiveness. When Srila Prabhupada was sitting at Koshi with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, for hours and hours and hours Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was speaking, and so many people were asking questions, and he was answering all of them. And Srila Prabhupada did not speak a word in that whole darshan. He just sat and listened with an eagerness to understand, with an eagerness to serve. And the next time Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur met Srila Prabhupada in Allahabad, Rupa Goswami Gaudiya Math. Allahabad Prayag is where Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami, who also approached him with complete submissive, ready to serve. So the temple president recommended, this is Abhay Charan. He wants to be your disciple. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he saw him and very pleased. He said, oh yes, I will initiate him. I marked that he likes to hear. Prabhupada didn't ask any questions. But his inquisitiveness was he was coming to the place where he could hear. He was eager to hear. So whether someone else is asking the question, or whether no one's asking a question, but somebody's speaking, Harikatha, if you are eager to hear, eager to learn, eager to purify your heart by that sound vibration, that is inquisitiveness. Sometimes we can't think of a question to ask, but we are hearing. That is we should not just tax our brains to think of a question to ask. As you're hearing, if you have a question, you ask. But the most important, real inquisitiveness means you've come to hear. Does that answer your question? I'll be honest with you. For the first many years I was a devotee, I never asked a question in class because I was too shy. but I just would listen. But every day I would be in class listening, taking notes, trying to learn, trying to understand. And then somehow or other, all my shyness went away. But anyways, just by coming regularly with that eagerness, that is what Krishna is speaking. Just the fact that you sacrifice your time, you can be doing so many other things. The whole world is out there beckoning you to engage in so many activities. The fact that you sacrifice everything else to come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class, to sit down and read Srila Prabhupada's books attentively with an eagerness to hear, that is inquisitiveness. Even if it's not even a class, if you're just sitting and reading Prabhupada's books with a desire to learn, that is perfect inquisitiveness. That is what Krishna is telling. Hari Prashnena Sevaya. And then if you're willing to implement those instructions with your life, that is seva. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.